This meeting of the Santa Claus County Board of Supervisors will now come to order. Please rise for a salute to our flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
This is the time in our meeting that is open for public comments for anybody from the audience who wishes to address this board on any item that is not on the agenda. Does anybody wish to address this board under public comment? Okay, seeing none, we'll move to the consent calendar. Does any member of this board wish to pull an item from the consent calendar? Okay. Seeing none, I'll entertain a motion.
Move for approval.
Second.
Okay, motion made by Supervisor Grover and seconded by Supervisor Monti to approve the consent calendar. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion carried 5-0. Okay, we will move now to item B5. Approval of the draft airport layout program and narrative report for consideration, the environmental impact report for the proposed West Park development. May I have a staff report? Mr. Boggs?
Good evening, Chairman DeMartini and members of the board. Keith Boggs, Deputy Executive Officer, Chief Executive Office, Economic Development. The purpose of this item this evening is to present to you the draft airport layout plan and narrative report for the general aviation component of the industrial development effort at Crows Landing. I thought I'd do this evening, but I'm spending probably more time than most of you out there at this site, is to, as I read into the record some of the background, share with you some of the aerial footage of your air facility. In March of 2006, your board authorized entering into a contractual agreement with ESA Airports for the development of an airport layout plan and narrative, along with the development of an airport land use compatibility policy language. The ESA process identified three potential reuse scenarios. In late summer 2006, these were shared via public workshop with the community. In September of 2006, he provided staff with a very clear direction, selecting reuse scenario number 3, the retention of the prevailing wind northwest to southeast 5,300-foot runway. At that same September 2006 meeting, staff was also instructed to suspend the airport layout planning and environmental review pending the outcome of a request for proposals process, seeking private sector participation and investment in the project area. That process is well documented, and in April of 2008, the board selected a master developer candidate and reactivated the ESA contract moving forward. And we're coming up here on the airport or the landing strip that is the prevailing wind runway. I'm going to move on. The airport layout plan presents airport development over a 20-plus year planning horizon. There are four phases discussed in the planning document. Opening phase is 0 to 5 years, the short term, the intermediate, 11-plus years, and then the ultimate or long-term 20-plus years into the future horizon. Basically, an airport layout plan and support narrative focuses on the types of facilities that are appropriate and required in the near and long term, and discusses the projected operations and activities that may be required over the course of the planning horizon. And on the screen currently is the initial airport footprint. The opening phase, 0 through 5 years, would include the 5,300-foot long, 100-foot wide prevailing wind runway. The runway would be available for day use only at startup. A portion of the former north-south runway would be retained as an airport building area, including administration and operations, tie downs, and hangars. A manual gate and fencing would provide controlled access and a startup facility would accommodate aircraft reference category B2, which in essence are small general aviation aircraft. In the short term, 6 to 10 year time frame, the runway and taxiway configurations are not expected to change. However, runway lighting, navigational aids, and a helicopter takeoff landing area are anticipated. And that's right there. In the intermediate horizon, over 10 years of operations, the plan allows for the potential for runway expansion to extend the runway to 6,300 feet. This, of course, would be a decision based upon airport traffic, ground-based activity, and business interest, and, of course, business support. An extension would allow for accommodating aircraft in the C2 aircraft reference category, which would allow business and corporate jet uses. At an ultimate build-out, over 20 years of operation, the airport layout plan envisions the potential use of two parallel runways at 6,300 feet each. Again, this ability to expand would be based upon airport service demands. Adoption of an airport layout plan and narrative are subject to the California Environmental Quality Act, CEQA, review process. With the environmental review in full swing on the Crows West Park project, staff is recommending that you approve this ALP, which is consistent with the reuse strategy and guidelines provided in September 2006, so that this work can be folded into the ongoing EIR work product. And finally, staff also recommends that should you approve this draft airport layout plan this evening, that you also recommend and refer the ALP to the Kelly Airport Land Use Commission for its review and future inclusion into the existing airport land use compatibility plan. And that concludes my brief summary. Both of the plan authors are here this evening, Lisa Harmon, ESA Airports, and David Heal from Mead & Hunt, to answer any technical questions that you may have about the airport layout planning process.
Are there any questions from the board to staff or to our consultants? Seeing none, let me just ask one. Have you met with the historical societies yet over the Pioneer Cemetery?
I meet with them tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. Mm-hmm.
You don't see that as anything we have to take into consideration tonight. It's such a small area.
Heavens no.
Supervisor Chiesa.
Okay.
Hi.
I just had a question. I saw in the book, and that was made for some fine reading, the lengthening of the runway is for small jet aircraft, but is there any hope in the future of using any sort of transport type aircraft, or would the length of the runway need to be much longer?
I can certainly defer to David Heal from Mead & Hutton on that, but I can give you some background that this dialogue has come full circle. As far back as 6 years ago, there was quite a bit of conversation about large aircraft, a Pacific Rim, air cargo kind of stuff. And when we look at the 10,000 feet just south of us in Merced, the successes in Fresno, Sacramento becoming an international airport, and an additional runway in OAK, it just really didn't pencil out as an opportunity. So we I've kind of moved away from that over the last 6 years.
That's fine. Thank you.
Further questions of staff? Okay, let's open it up to the public. Anybody from the audience wish to address this board on this issue? Okay, seeing none, we'll bring it back to the board for action. Any comments?
I have no comment.
Okay, well, let me make one. You know, I've never been much of a supporter of this whole project, but in this particular phase of it, I do not see any reason myself to oppose it. This is just concerns the airport. It's a layout plan. It's what can be put in certain zones. It does designate some land to be reserved for a second runway should we want to put one in later. This has been through the steering committee, and I see no changes in this from what's went through the steering committee. Now, when we get into subjects such as a railroad container yard and the size of the project, I'll have a lot to say about it.
But in this, the part of it where there's the airport layout, at this time I have no objection to it.
Is that a motion?
No, no, it's not.
I concur with the chairman's comments, and I'll make the motion.
And I'll
I think regardless of the developer, this is a progress that needs to be made on the project.
Second.
Okay. Motion's made by Supervisor Grover and seconded by Supervisor O'Brien. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion carried 5-0.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, Mr. Boggs. Report into ESA Airports. Okay, we will move to item B6. Approval to enter into an agreement with General Electric Company for the purchase of an electronic medical records system. Staff report, Marianne.
Good evening, Chairman DeMartini, Supervisors, Mr. Robinson, Mr. Doring. I'm Marianne Lee. I'm the Managing Director of the Health Services Agency. And with me at the table tonight is Greg Dietrich. He's the Associate Director of our clinic system. We're here this evening to ask the permission to purchase an electronic medical record system. And we're very pleased to be before you tonight with this, as this proposal really represents an extraordinary amount of work by both HSA staff and the physicians that work in our system. We're going to take a few moments to explain what the EMR is and what it will do for HSA, talk about the process that we went through to select our preferred vendor, explain the cost and financing of this project, and provide some key updates and an approval process that we've gone through, and then finally make our recommendations to you. Before we really launch into the EMR, I wanted to address this right up front, why we would be before you now asking to make a fairly significant investment, considering the state of the economy and the situation with the state budget. And we believe that there are some really important reasons why we're asking for this now. Certainly, efficiency improvements in our system are always going to be critical, and this is one of those. But there's an accreditation requirement in the Family Medicine Residency Program in 09 that an EMR be used by residents in their training. We have an accreditation site visit we're expecting in the later part of this calendar year. But from a financial standpoint, and we're going to talk more about this later in the presentation, we have a really time-limited opportunity right now because of the FQHC designation. We are in our base rate-setting year, so any reasonably anticipated expense in the clinic system, we really want to hit in this fiscal year so that it's included in that base rate. Okay, what is an electronic medical record? I'm not going to read what's before you there. Basically, an EMR will take the paper, the medical record, most of what's in that paper, medical chart, the doctor's notes, the nurse's notes, medications, the diagnosis, the diagnostic testing and results, all the information having to do with those patient encounters, we'll take it from paper to an electronic system. So then we're capturing the information electronically, we can report on it, we can exchange the information. In our situation, it's also it's more comprehensive than that. It is it has a practice management component too, so it will include the scheduling and billing that currently is part of the old hospital system, Meditech. So it will replace that. So it's a more integrated system, and then we'll interface with the county's Oracle system on the back end for the financial reporting. At this point, I'm going to turn the presentation to Greg. I said that Greg is the associate director of our clinic system. Prior to that, for a short time, Greg was the IT manager as well at the agency, so he's uniquely qualified to talk with you about the EMR.
Thank you, Marianne. Why implement an electronic medical record at Health Services Agency now?
Please speak into the microphone.
As Marianne has alluded to, it's a 2009 accreditation requirement for the residency program as well as a recruiting tool. There are numerous operational efficiencies that can be gained, such as centralized nurse triage or something as simple as refilling a prescription that is phoned over right now. That's a labor-intensive process that is not very timely. A lot of labor can be reduced by implementing the EMR. greatly improved access to patient information. That would be immediate, remote, concurrent access to the patient chart rather than pulling up a paper chart. Single data entry rather than concurrent or the duplication of efforts that is currently done. Enhanced quality of care initiatives for improved chronic disease management, such as diabetes through disease registry, and potential cost avoidance for the MIA program by disease management. Additionally, there's enhanced patient management by being able to mine this data. This data will be in an electronic format, so something along the line of a medication recall can be facilitated very easily. Currently, that is pulling of charts and looking for information in paper charts. There's long-term potential to increase the visit capacity of our clinic systems by re-engineering operations and increasing the efficiency of providers and staff. Additionally, there are some community health center reporting requirements, and as an F2, we have certain annual reporting needs that this software will facilitate. Process to select this vendor, we started with a request for proposal process in November of 2005. Nine vendors responded to that request. This included vendors that needed to have both a practice management component and an electronic medical records component, primarily because right now we're on Meditech for our financial systems. We need to migrate into Oracle, and until we can get rid of Meditech for billing and accounts receivable, we are duplicating some efforts. It involved a review team that was HSA staff, administration, finance, information technology, billing, clinicians, HSA providers, as well as the senior faculty medical group provider base, liaisons for the CEO's office, and strategic business technologies. From there, from those nine vendors, we went on to conference calls, grading of them, and on-site demonstrations by each of them. Our panel narrowed that down to two finalists, and the finalists primarily were because of FQ requirements. From that point in time, we have reassembled and gone on site visits to each of these vendors and focused on FQ and residency considerations at these site visits. And in July of 2008, we decided on General Electric's Centricity product as our vendor of choice. And since that time, we've been negotiating with the vendor, primarily along their business model is to sell their product on a per billing provider basis. Since we are a little bit unique with the residency program and external contracted positions that are not, one FTE equivalent, that would not be a beneficial way to license this product. So we focus on concurrent user licensing. If you look at the cost, these are the hard costs of the EMR project, not including internal labor costs, but there are software expenses, hardware, which includes third-party hardware components, implementation services from both GE and their vendor partner, SI Solutions, which have expertise in the FQ sphere. The total EMR costs are approximately $2.3 million. We've identified two primary funding sources to facilitate this project. One of those being public facility fees that are earmarked toward healthcare, and the second being GE government financing, which affords us a good interest rate by this being a municipal debt, and we were able to negotiate with them to eliminate the potential for some early prepayment penalties. As Marianne alluded, this is our base year, and under FQ, a large percentage of our business is reimbursed at cost. So by virtue of in essence, 4.5 months of this fiscal year, the legitimate expenses we can incur on this product will increase our reimbursement rate. We have the potential to, for certain FQ-eligible visits, increase that rate by $3 to $5 in perpetuity. So what we're looking at is a maximum loan payment over a four-year time frame of $29,000. However, once we have our final rate set, we could increase our per month cash intake by $39,000 by embedding the cost of this EMR in our base year. Additionally, the base rate will be retroactive back to when we established FQ in October of 2007. So at some point late in this calendar year, we will be made whole from these government entities. There's a potential timeline here. I'm not really going to go into the detail other than to speak that EMR is going to be a journey for us, but it's critical that we implement it correctly. We only have one opportunity to implement it correctly. We're taking an incremental approach by looking at the practice management component first, then taking that system-wide, and then on a secondary track, bringing up the EMR with a group of pilot physicians, a site, and then every 60 days an additional site, and building upon that, leveraging of the features and having to manage this operational change in our clinic system.
Just to briefly provide some information in terms of the due diligence that we've gone through with this project, the EMR was a part of the three-year strategic plan that that was approved back in September of 2005. It has been a part of our strategic and operational priorities during the last two fiscal years, approved by your board and approved as an operational priority of the Community Health Center Board for this fiscal year. We mentioned the public facility fees. A proposal was made to that committee where funding was approved in November. And then we presented a proposal for this project to the Health Executive Committee of your board in December, where we received support. The Community Health Center Board approved the project at their January meeting. And then because of the financing component of this proposal, we presented the information to the Debt Advisory Committee in January. So with that, I'll move to the staff recommendations. We're asking that you approve the contract with General Electric Company for the EMR system and that you authorize me to enter the agreement with GE for the purchase of the system, that you authorize me to enter the financing agreement with GE government finance, that you approve the use of the $946,000 of public facility fees toward this project, that you direct the auditor to increase the appropriations and estimated revenue for the project, and that you allow the reclassification of two positions that will help support this project and the ongoing system in the future. And with that, we'll stop and try to answer any of your questions.
Okay, we have some questions for you. Supervisor Grover?
Just want to reemphasize what I remember talking about at our committee meeting, the fact that even though it appears to be not the best timing for capital expenses, we have just a little over a two-year payback and actually an enhancement over 7 years of a projected more than $7 million.
That's
correct. That correct?
That's correct.
Supervisor O'Brien?
My comments are very similar. When this first appeared on my radar screen, I'll have to admit I was like, why are we spending $2.2 million in these tough financial times? But the simple answer is because it makes financial sense to do it. Our PFF that we're putting up is restricted use funds. And we collected that money for the sole purpose of healthcare systems. We can't spend it for salaries. We can't spend it anything other than capital expenditures. The ROI and payback are incredible, and it makes sense to go forward with it.
The proposed agreement calls for an optional purchase of a capitalization system, disease registry, and a secure managing portal. Are you recommending that at this time, or is that something we'll take up at a future day?
I'll address that. It was something that was in our initial proposal. It was an all-one package. We broke these items out because we weren't sure if indeed we were going to be able to implement them within the time frame. So we extended some of the quotes for those. The first one up would be ManageMed, which is a capitation system for the IHCP program. I think, indeed, we are going to move forward with that. The other two, which is a PEXIS, a disease registry, I think we will move forward with. The other one, which is a secure messaging and a patient portal, I think we have to make a business case for that prior to the execution date of that option.
Can you tell us what a disease registry is?
It's a method to manage chronic diseases such as diabetes, congestive heart disease, asthma. An EMR will do certain things wonderfully. It will remind you to recall patients, to look at the detail that is in your EMR to call back patients when they become of a certain age for certain diagnostic work. The disease registry goes beyond that, and it's more of a model of a care team. It's not always the provider who is having to wait for the patient to present, but the MA, additional staff, can participate in managing the disease and treating it as a chronic disease rather than just episodic care when the patient comes back in. We currently have a disease registry called RIDE, which is for immunizations, but this would be an add-on to our product specifically geared toward chronic disease management.
So if I understand you properly, then you're asking us to approve the two capitalization system and the disease registry, but not the secure messaging porthole. Did I understand that correctly, or am I wrong on that?
This proposal is asking for authorization to move forward with all of these proposals, but at a certain point in time, when we look at where we are come December, if it is not something that is feasible to implement at that time, I think we could either defer it or extend the quote. All of these items were in one quote. I had them broken out because I consider them more optional than core and what we can operationally implement within 1 year.
Okay. Supervisor Kieser.
This certainly appears to be a great deal for the county, and by no means would I stop it. I have a question on the reimbursement rate on the patient visits. It's going to go retroactive. And how is it that the government is going to pay us for retroactive visits? That doesn't seem like common sense, but I'm willing to accept that.
That's a good question. The F2HC designation was awarded September 20th of 2007, and the FQ reimbursement is basically cost-based for our Medi-Cal and Medicare, although there's a ceiling for Medicare that's below cost. And it's not that we're not being reimbursed right now, but we're being reimbursed on an interim rate until they have a full fiscal year to review our cost report, and then they'll set the real rate and go back and reconcile. So there's an adjustment that we're expecting retroactive, not the full payment.
Any further questions from staff? Anyone from the audience wish to comment on this item? Okay, seeing none, we'll bring it back to the board for action. Further comments?
So moved.
Second.
Okay. Motion made by Supervisor Monteith and seconded by Supervisor O'Brien. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion carried 5-0.
Thank you.
And we will move to item B7, consideration of the mid-year financial report for fiscal year 2008-2009.
Staff is setting up the PowerPoint. I'd like to initiate this discussion with just a few comments. First, I want to recognize an outstanding budget team comprised of department heads and their budget staff and our very capable CEO staff led by Assistant CEO Monica Nino, Patty Hill Thomas, Stan Ryson, and supported by Christina Alfaro, Christy Amaral, Marnie Artis, Nancy Bronstein, Tara Chumley, Doris Foster, Brenda Kiley, Jim Quartz, Mark Loser, Leticia Lomelli, Raul Mendez, Sandra Regalos, Kelly Rodriguez, and Cynthia Thomason. I read those names to you because I think often there is little understanding of the complexity of the budget, and even in working in what is seemingly a completed budget environment, that is, we're presenting you information that relates specifically to a budget that you've already adopted. We invest hundreds, if not thousands, of hours to bring to the public and to the board not only a current status, but also a projection into the future. I would like to particularly compliment at this time, if I can, our county department heads. Something that I've seen in my 20-plus years of service in local government is that in challenging times, departments tend to compartmentalize their functions and their services, and the me-first type of a emphasis starts extending itself to discussions. And to the credit of this outstanding group of department heads that we have, we simply haven't seen that in this environment. I think there are a couple of reasons for that. I think the board priority groups have been a great forum for discussions that allow the department heads, their staff, and CEO staff to discuss the issues, the interrelationship that exists among the departments, and the best beneficial outcome in a number of potential outcomes in evaluating any particular scenario. I tell you this because I want to discuss just briefly the budget between now and June 30th of 2009, because that technically is why you're here. But I want to spend a little bit more time, if I may, discussing with you what, in my view, the future holds. This year's mid-year budget focuses both on the balance of the current fiscal and on continuing the preparations for the next 2 to 3 years beyond 2008-2009. Our county departments are actively evaluating current operations and looking to a variety of program options that can result in cost reductions ranging in the 3 to 10% range, and in some cases even more than 10%. Many departments have already successfully identified very significant savings in the current year using a number of different strategies. One of those strategies has been to hold positions vacant. I talked to you over the last several weeks about some of the benefits we've seen in our current county budget by departments aggressively applying the hiring freeze that we put in place in December. And I would tell you now that we currently are holding 407 vacant positions, which represents about 10% of the allocated workforce. Very significant number, and speaks to the seriousness with which our departments have viewed the current financial circumstances. Even with ongoing uncertainties relating to the state budget and its impact on local services, we are working to develop program options that will have a reasonable chance of success. We're anticipating discretionary general fund revenue losses that could exceed $15 million in the budget year, potentially significant increases in retirement contributions, and uncertainty in state funding of state-mandated local programs and ongoing grant-supported programs. As you will remember, we do have a no-backfill policy in our grant programs, and that no-backfill policy is going to be significantly challenged in this next budget, and we are hopeful that the board and county departments will recognize the value of that policy. We'll continue to support it as we move forward. In response, we will continue to evaluate and implement cost-saving measures that will help us to weather the next several years. So notice that the mid-year budget requests are very limited, which speaks to the active involvement and general understanding by department heads of our budget challenges. Again, I want to thank the budget team, county departments, for the fine work they've done in preparing this mid-year report and in preparing for the economic challenges ahead. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Robinson. Members of the board, Patty Hill Thomas from the Chief Executive Office, with Mayor Monica Nino and Jim Court. Your board priorities are the highlight of the organization of our fiscal planning and our fiscal reporting, and the seven priorities are listed on the screen as well as in the document summarized for all the county departments that fit within primarily each of your board's priorities. Our fiscal reporting to you is regular, it's often, and it's focused on staying on course. Today's mid-year, or tonight's mid-year, is recommending that we take actions to stay on course and maintain a balanced budget. We'll be back in May with the third quarter fiscal report, and we'll be back before the end of the year, both with the proposed budget for the coming year as well as continued financial reporting on our current year pro- progress. Our goals at the mid-year, and many of us and others in the audience might comment, it's like redoing the budget at the middle of the year, is really to be able to report to you and to the organization and to the community that we serve our fiscal performance in the first 6 months of the fiscal year, identifying issues or exposures that should be addressed, making adjustments to ensure that we end the year in a positive fiscal position, and we do, and under your board's direction, every year end in a positive financial position. And perhaps one of the most important things that this analysis does is looking ahead, not only the coming years, but using a long-range model that we use in our department, looking beyond into the next several years so that we can try to foresee the kind of fiscal challenges or turns that we may need to take or ask you to address. Everyone knows these are very challenging times. The combination of the economy, very significant loss in our local discretionary revenues, and we'll show you that detail in a moment, the state budget crisis, and perhaps some components of the federal stimulus package signed today, all are likely to change some of what we're recommending to you tonight and reporting to you. All the more reason for us to continue regular monitoring and reporting, and echoing Rick's comments, we really appreciate the efforts of our department. In the current year, again, we are finding ourselves with a reduction in local revenues, actions necessary to create at least a $5 million fund balance or savings at the end of this fiscal year. At mid-year, we asked every department to make an additional 3% reduction, and we have continued to minimize our recommendations to use the contingency fund to help us have a positive year-end fund balance. We're also evaluating the tax loss reserve fund revenue again to see if one-time revenue is available from that source. We are not recommending, nor did we in the adoption of the final budget, nor today, the use of any of our designations or reserves, as we feel like this financial situation will take several years to come out of, and we want to maintain that level of fiscal stability in these challenging times. And we need to continue considering every possible cost reduction strategy, and we are doing that in cooperation with our department heads. So with that, we're going to get into a little bit of detail.
Good evening, Chairman, members of the board, Mr. Robinson, Mr. Doring. My name is Monica Nino, and I'm from the Chief Executive Office. The chart before you illustrates where we started the fiscal year. This board approved a budget of over $966 million. We brought before this board first quarter recommendations that this board approved of over $1 million. What we have before you this evening is over $12 million in recommendations. Those are primarily in the board's priority of a healthy community. We will go into greater detail in slides that are coming forward. That'll bring our total budget upon the conclusion of this board meeting, if those are fully approved and recommended this evening, of over $980,629,594. The following slides will be, Jim Quartz will be reviewing discretionary revenue.
Good evening. As of mid-year, actual discretionary revenue was $47.9 million compared to $53.4 million for the same period 1 year ago. This amount represents 27.7% of the 2008-2009 final budget figure of $172.9 million. This is near the lower end of the typical range for the last 5 years. Unprecedented factors and indicators in our declining economy cause us to believe that our projected year-end actuals will be $168.8 million. That's a $4.1 million decrease to our estimates proposed at the presentation of the final budget. The following is a summary of the recommended adjustments to the current year budget. And we're going to highlight just a few of these significant changes. The transfer tax is collected by the clerk recorder at the time of recording when real property changes hands. The recent increase in real estate activity has impacted this revenue in a positive manner. Based upon the expectation of a continued active real estate market during the remainder of the fiscal year, we are projecting nearly $1.9 million to be collected by year end. This will exceed the $1.5 million received last year and is more than $500,000 over the budgeted amount of $1.34 million. revenue from the public safety sales tax or the half-cent sales tax is based on a county's portion of the overall state sales tax pool. The rate applied to the pool is based on sales tax activity within each county, and the slightest change in the pool rate can have a significant impact on the revenue source. The new rate for the current fiscal year reflects a decrease from the prior year's rate. This decreasing pool rate, coupled with the falling statewide sales tax revenue, results in a smaller portion of revenue for the county. It is estimated that year-end revenue will fall $2.8 million short of last year and $1.9 million short of the current year's budget. And we need to note that this revenue source contributes to the funding of the sheriff's office, the district attorney, and the public defender, and probation also. Included in the property tax category are current secured property taxes and supplemental taxes. Although the residential real estate market has been spiraling down for the last 2 to 3 years, the total assessed value of all property in the county has just begun to feel this effect. The assessment roll as determined in June of 2008, upon which the current tax roll is based, was below the prior year's roll for the first time in memory. Since June, the roll has been reduced another $119 million, and further decreases before year-end are probable. Supplemental tax refunds are beginning to equal, if not exceed, the amount of supplemental bills that are being sent out, which means at best, no supplemental tax revenue for the rest of the fiscal year, and at worst, the loss of some of the revenue already received. The combination of these factors leads to the recommendation to reduce various property tax-related revenue estimates by slightly over $1 million. Sales tax revenue received as of mid-year is nearly $433,000 less than last year at this time. As the economy struggles, the general population continues to rein in consumer spending, causing a drop in sales tax revenue. Even though a decline was factored in when the proposed and final budgets were determined, a further adjustment is necessary as we head into the latter half of the fiscal year. $13.7 million projected by year-end falls over $800,000 short of the $14.5 million budget. Finally, we're going to look at revenue from interest earnings. As of mid-year is down from last year at this time by $473,000. The interest rate earned by funds on deposit in the county treasury is adjusted quarterly, and last year ranged from a high of 5.4% to a low of 3.9%. In comparison, the rate for fiscal year 2008-2009 thus far is averaging 3.4%. So in light of the lower rates and fluctuations in the daily cash balance, a decrease of $652,000 to this source of revenue is in order.
Taking into consideration those reductions in discretionary revenue, the following slides will share with you the overall recommendations and appropriations for, by board priority. Overall, they are a lot less than they have been in previous years, and you'll also see when we get to our staffing charts that we're overall recommending a reduction of 5 allocated positions. For a safe community, we are recommending an increase in appropriations of over $463,316. As part of our 3% targeted reduction that we issued to departments as part of the mid-year instructions, for a safe community, we had requested overall a savings of over $3.3 million. Departments within a safe community, we're able to come up with 1.3 of that 3.3 or their targeted reduction prior to year end. Within a safe community, we are recommending an increase for the Sheriff's Department of over $504,422. One of the largest amounts within that $504,000 is over $230,047 within our CalID program, which is 100% self-supported through fees that it receives for increased equipment for the live scan, along with installation costs and additional maintenance contracts. Within our contract cities, we are recommending an increase of approximately $115,000 to to fund overtime and extra help for frontline law enforcement that is funded from the Supplemental Law Enforcement Services Fund, along with Office of Traffic Safety Grant Funds. For our Inmate Welfare Fund, we are recommending an increase of over $61,000 to fund an additional position for the Vocational Landscape course, along with chaplain-related costs and the Literacy Center program. Within our Vehicle Theft Unit, we are recommending over $16,000 increase for services and supplies to fund reimbursement for personnel costs related to the task force. Within a healthy community, this is our largest recommendation before you this evening. We are recommending over $11,917,737. Primarily, this increase is taking place within our community services agency, and we will get to that once we come across that slide. The first one will be Behavioral Health and Recovery Services for a reduction of over $545,701. And that's as a result of a reduction in Medi-Cal reimbursement, along with reductions in realignment revenue. For child support services, we are recommending a reduction of over $1 million, and that relates to staffing reductions as a result of the reduction in force that we brought before you earlier in the fiscal year, along with the relocation of staff from a previously rented facility. Within our Community Services Agency, we are recommending an increase of over $13,699,104. We are recommending the change in office hours, along with an increase that will fund from both state and federal funding and county match increase for negotiated salary increases in our in-home supportive services program. Our in-home supported services program provides in-home services to over 5,000 frail and elderly individuals per month. At mid-year, this total program increase, we are recommending at over $9,791,200. Of that, over $8 million is being funded by state and federal funds, and we are recommending $1,764,374 to be a transfer from appropriations for contingency. This board approved that money to be set aside in appropriations for contingencies when the final budget was approved in September of 2008. This increase will fund the agreement between the county and the United Domestic Workers of America that represents, it is the union that represents our in-home supportive services workers. That agreement was approved by this board in July 24th of 2007. As a result of uncertainties at the state level, our in-home supportive services program, we held off adopting this funding level until the mid-year budget. As a result of this recommended adjustment, this will bring this program up to over $51 million. The total general funds contribution based upon this recommendation will increase to $2.5 million for a total appropriation of $51,154,417 in appropriations. For our health services agency, we are recommending a reduction in appropriations to conserve the use of public health division's fund balance of $287,181. Within a strong local economy, we are recommending a reduction in appropriations of $66,809. Within a strong local economy, we did request targeted reductions of over $25,569. These departments within the strong local economy are able to achieve these reductions of $25,569 prior to year end as part of their mid-year targeted reduction. Within an Alliance WorkNet, we are recommending increased funding for $236,419 as a result of federal and state funding for additional services for dislocated workers. For the library, which is a large reduction of over $303,228, that's primarily due to decreased sales tax revenue. As we stated within our discretionary general fund dollars, we're within the general fund itself, we are also experiencing a reduction in our sales tax dollars. Within a well-planned infrastructure system, we are recommending overall an increase of $681,617. Within this board priority, we requested a 3% targeted reduction of 687 departments within this priority are recommending are able to achieve a reduction of 211,169 or 71,000 above their targeted requested reduction. Within a well-planned infrastructure, we are recommending an increase to our Parks and Recreation Department of over 52,000. This is primarily for our water system testing and monitoring at Frank Rains Park. This is the only designation transfer that we have before you this evening. This board set aside two fiscal years ago over $1 million in designations for various water treatment and parks improvements for both Frank Rains and our Woodward Reservoir water treatment. For our Public Works Department, we are recommending an increase in appropriations of over $629,000. That is additional funding for Morgan Shop, our Engineering Division of Public Works, the Hammett and Kernan Project Study Report operational budget. We do have a recommended adjustment to utilize some of our Community Services Agency 10 Public Works Fund balance for storm drain services. Within the efficient delivery of public services board priority, we are recommending overall a reduction of over $4,000 and $4,078. Within efficient delivery, these departments were requested to achieve a 3% reduction of over $810,000. Within this board priority, these departments are recommending that they are able to achieve over $1,694,704,000 or $884,000 over the targeted requested reduction at mid-year. Within the efficient delivery of public services, this is where currently we have our CEO appropriations for contingencies budget allocated. This is where we are recommending a reduction to this contingency fund of $1,764,374 to meet the general fund obligation in accordance with our agreement with our in-home supportive services negotiated salary agreement. We are recommending an increase in our Crow's Landing budget unit of over $338,109 to fund reimbursement that we will receive from West Park for legal costs for project planning and environmental review, along with additional revenue we are receiving on our ag lease with Pride of San Juan. Within our General Services Agency facility maintenance budget, we are recommending a reduction. Earlier in this fiscal year, we brought to the board the court transfer, which took place and was approved in December of 2008. We ended up reducing approximately 5 positions within that department, and this is as a result of that court transfer. What we have before you is a chart on our total recommended staffing changes. Currently, we have authorized positions of 4,385. As what was stated earlier, currently 407 of those currently allocated positions are vacant. We are recommending before you today a total reduction of 5 positions, one addition in a safe community, and that is being recommended in our inmate welfare fund. We are recommending 1 reduction in the safe community, 2 reductions in our healthy community, and 3 in our strong local economy to bring our total allocated positions to 4,380.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, as we look ahead, the continuing crisis at the state level, rising health insurance costs and our efforts to control those, many of our multi-year labor agreements end in the coming fiscal year, 2009-2010. The retirement system cost exposure is one that is getting considerable review and discussion will continue, too, as we need to identify options to limit our cost exposures there. And the worsening economic trends are really showing themselves in local discretionary revenue collections that traditionally fund local programs like public safety and general government programs. The projected state budget deficit of $41 billion over the next 18 months not only represents potential additional reductions to programs and services, but presents a growing cash shortfall problem that the state has been considering sharing more with local governments like counties. And so not only are we looking at program reductions, But we're also looking at cash challenges to our cash funds from the states in action on the state budget. We are starting to develop, for your consideration, the strategic options for next year and beyond. Some of them look very familiar because they follow along the recommendations we've made to you in the past. We need to take affirmative action to make a fund balance savings at year end. And Monica reported that some of our departments have been able to exceed those targets. Some are still working on them. We've seen some improvement just in the last couple of days. So that's an important area for us to continue to focus on with our county department. The county's no backfill policy is essential at this time. So when the state or federal government makes program reductions, it is our intent to recommend that those programs be specifically reduced and their expenses be eliminated in order to protect the county's general fund during these times. We are asking all the departments in their budget strategy to develop program-specific reduction plans. And the next slide says from 3 to 10% or more as necessary in order to ensure a balanced budget for next year. Good news, and you last week received the safety awards, presented them, the work led by Supervisor Brian, your board, the county departments at improving our safety program is resulting and again, savings in the workers' comp program that we can return back to the departments and use as a budget balancing strategy. About $3 million projected for next year, so that's a significant number. And a $1 million savings in the unemployment retained earnings. Both of those are one-time savings. Perhaps the workers' comp is ongoing because we're starting to see a trend available to help balance the budget. Those budget target reductions, however, are going to be critical. We're going to ask our departments when they submit their proposed budget to bring in a reduced level of spending commensurate with the types of reductions we expect for next year and beyond. We're considering recommending to you a lower base budget for the appropriation for contingency. Your board has been extraordinarily conservative in the use of contingency funds. The organization has worked fairly well within the allocated budget without going to that contingency fund. And so there may be some opportunity for savings there. Those strategies to reduce retirement costs, health insurance costs, and virtually all cost reduction options are under consideration and will be discussed with you in a very public way as we move through the upcoming budget. The next slide shows you the preliminary budget schedule we're considering bringing to your board at the third quarter with the proposed budget hearings that second week in June, June 9th through 11th, and the adoption of the final budget right around the middle of September of 2009. We have before you today 7 recommendations to accept the mid-year report, to make the use by a 4/5 vote of the transfer from the appropriation of contingencies for $1.76 million as outlined for the in-home supportive services workers contract, to authorize the CEO and the auditor to make the necessary adjustments, to amend the salary and position allocation for the staffing changes recommended in Attachment A and included in this report. We're asking you to approve the revised community services operating hours effective March 1st. That's the Wednesday evening hours that are being really underutilized at this time. Directing the CEO to develop the budget reduction strategy for the remainder of this year and for next year's proposed budget, and to approve the contracts in accordance with our reporting requirements to you that are included in the report on Attachment B that are cumulative in the amount of $100,000 or greater since July of 2003. The last slide is just a quick look at how to get to the county's budget report on the county's website at www.stancounty.com, and we have this available in the back of the room as well. And we would be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Questions of staff? Well, let me start then. They're all probably sharpening up their pencil. The in-home supportive services appears to be a program that just increases, you know, 7-8% a year. Does the county have any ability to put a cap on how many hours that we can pay for, or have any ability to designate what level of care somebody needs, because there's about five levels, roughly, of care, and I think that we're providing care for up to about the fourth level. But there's 1.7 million more for in-home supportive services. Appears to be that we have no control at all over the cost of this program. I hope I'm mistaken.
I would ask Christine Applegate to come up, our Community Services Agency Director, and provide you a response to your specific question.
The short answer is no. This is an entitlement program. So the social workers do have the ability, and they do go out and assess regularly. They assess client when they are first referred for service to see how many hours that they would be eligible for, and they go out and regularly reassess to make sure that we're not granting any extra hours or anything that is not needed. On the other hand, since it is an entitlement program, anyone who is entitled and falls within the qualifications can be assessed for service. The state sets what types of services in those five levels. And one of the proposals under consideration for coming, if they ever pass a budget at the state, would be to change that so that there would be a restriction on the functional index in terms of the ones who need less service, who have less personal or medical needs, might get less service. So the state would set that, and so there is a possibility it could be changed. At the local level, what we try to do is just become as efficient as possible, make sure we assess it correctly for the hours, and that we're not providing any extra hours to anyone who doesn't have the eligibility for that.
I understand that you do the assessment, because I've been out with the caseworkers that have done that before a few times. But anyone who requests this, if they meet that criteria, it's unlimited amount of hours that the county would have.
Well, it's not unlimited.
It's not per person.
Right.
That if we had another 100 people that applied for the service that qualified tomorrow, we would be on the hook for paying part of that cost.
Yes.
The functional index is something I've talked to Senator Cogdell about a few times, and that is only something that the state of California can do?
Yes. They're the ones who set that.
And there's five levels, right?
There are five levels, and it goes from those who need the more low-level service, such as help with housekeeping or shopping, all the way up to those who have very serious medical needs.
And the in-home supportive services comes in at level four?
Well, they serve all five levels, but each person would be assessed for what they needed in terms of what kinds of services they needed, and there is a cap on the hours, so it's not completely unlimited, but those levels are determined by the state.
And a lot of the people that are paid to take care of the patients are actually family members, too, aren't they?
Some of them are, yes.
Okay. That answers my question. If any member of the board has additional? Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Further questions of staff? Quiet tonight. Let's sit in and what we have to consider. Is there any member of the audience who wishes to address the board on this item? Any department heads that wish to speak up?
We had heard earlier from Lee Lendrigan that she had an interest in addressing the board about one specific issue.
Good evening, members of the board, Chairman DeMartini, CEO Robinson, and County Council Doc Doring. I'm before you tonight as your clerk recorder and registrar of voters to let you know of some upcoming items that I'd like you to just keep an open mind on with regard to budgetary items. The clerk recorder's office and the registrar of voters has had an opportunity to be within its budget this year. However, we do have an indication that there are some upcoming items which will possibly change that and force us to come before you in the next couple months. It might even be the next couple days. It depends on what the legislature does. We have been advised, and we have known for some time, that there is the potential of a special election being called in 2009 and this fiscal year. The thought at this point in time is that this might be called sometime in May or June. Our concern, of course, is that there wouldn't be a timely enough matter to be within code, and so that they will circumvent code of the legislature and ask us to do it in a shortened period of time, thus causing a more expensive election. The special election would be required to approve five components of the current budget that they are discussing in Sacramento. The changes to Proposition 10, Proposition 98, Proposition 63, the spending cap, and lottery changes all require voter approval. If the election is called, the indication would be to us that it would be May, potentially May 19th, or June, potentially June 2nd. We have been preparing now for a couple months. It's difficult to prepare not knowing when an election could take place, but we've been preparing and setting up locations to do poll worker training and then canceling them each month, as we're not sure which month it could possibly happen. I wanted to bring before the board the concept of how much this might cost. It's indicated to us that it will be an amount not to exceed $700,000 for a special election of this type. The savings on this, however, could be between $200,000 and $250,000 if we were able to have an all-male election. Poll working locations right now cost $40 a spot. Poll workers are $95 to $130 each. We have logic and accuracy testing if we have a poll election of 500 different pieces of equipment, including tabulators, auto-mark ballot markers. We have election equipment maintenance, which is called a preventative maintenance, which must be done on the equipment, costing the county approximately $160,000, which is equivalent for an entire year. It is currently scheduled to take place in our November election. However, if this election comes up, it could require us to hold two preventative maintenances instead of the one that's scheduled. And in addition, we would have additional printing costs and overtime and extra help if this were to be a polled election. There are many counties right now that are writing to the legislatures, and I urge you to assist me with this, indicating that if an election is held, a special election, we would like it to be an all-male election. Our voters in Stanislaus County are approximately 50% vote-by-mail voters right now, which means 50% of our voters are already casting their ballots in this way. The required spending authority would have to come from the board. We would anticipate trying to get that back from the state. It's unknown at this point in time whether or not they would allow that to be a reimbursable expense from the counties. I'm also just been made aware recently that there is potentially a recall election that could be coming forth in the Riverbank area. That would be an item which would be required for Riverbank itself to pay us for, but it would require spending authority, and then we would have to be reimbursed on that. Are there any questions?
If I'm not mistaken, ever since you've been our clerk recorder, haven't we had a special election every year?
That's correct. Mm-hmm. You were trying to go one without.
I don't think you're going to make it this year. Supervisor Grover.
Do you take any credit for that?
No.
The question I had is, even if the state didn't mandate that it be an all-male election, could we here in this county determine that?
We can only determine it with the legislature's authority for this type of an election.
So
it's a statewide election.
They have to give us the right to do it.
That's correct.
Mandated or not.
If this were what we consider a small city, a city under 100,000 people that was holding a specific district election, then the city would have, or the county would have, the authority to call one that didn't require us to have polling locations. As it is now, they are. I have attempted to make some contact with Senator Cogdale's office and various other senators in Sacramento, indicating to them of our requirement. I am a member of California Association of Clerk and Recorders, and we have attempted to do it through them as well. But it would be very helpful, of course, if the board were to stand up for this.
Could we have one, if we enacted it tonight, could we ask as a board letter go to all of our representatives.
Yeah, you could just direct staff to prepare that on your behalf, and we would get it out for you. This is something that we have asked Don Peterson to champion for us at various times over the last several years as we've looked at ways to cut costs in the elections process to make it permissible for counties to elect all mail ballots. It has not been a popular topic in the legislature before now, but this is perhaps a very good opportunity to identify ways to more efficiently provide election services. And yes, we certainly could do that.
Supervisor Monteith.
Well, as I understand you, and I also understand even if we get a budget, we don't have a budget unless we have the special election.
That is correct.
So,
and I believe it all has situation. To pass as well.
Right, that's correct. A lot of people aren't aware of that, but that's what the situation is.
Further questions, Ms. Lee?
Thank you for an opportunity to come forth. Appreciate it.
Anyone else in the audience that wishes to address this board, whether it be a member of the audience or a department head? Okay, seeing none, we'll bring it back to the board for action. Comments from the board? Usually we take staff recommendations all at once, but if anybody would like to pull a recommendation and vote on that separately, that would be agreeable to me. Supervisor Monteith.
Well, I think we've all had an opportunity to sit down with and review the situation, and I would like to make a motion that we accept it with all your recommendations.
Second. A motion is made by Supervisor Monteith and seconded by Supervisor Chiesa. I would like to make one comment before we do vote on it, that the Agricultural Department and the UC Extension together only represent one half of 1% of the entire county's budget, overseeing an industry that produces $2.4 billion products. Just wanted to make that point. Further comments? All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion carried. 5-0.
Thank you.
Supervisor Grover?
And is it implicit that we ask Mr. Robinson to send that letter requesting the provision for mail-in ballot, or do we need to?
I will have it in the mail tomorrow.
Good.
Okay. We have no scheduled matters tonight. We will move to correspondence.
This board has received a letter from the state Fish and Game Commission regarding a notice of proposed emergency regulatory action relating to incidental take of California tiger salamander.
Refer to the Department of Planning and Community Development and the Agricultural Commissioner and Sealer of Weights and Measures.
This board has received a letter from the Department of Veterans Affairs regarding the location of a new veteran health care service facility in the Central Valley.
Refer to the Area Agency on Aging, Veteran Services, and the Chief Executive Office.
This board has received a letter from the State Business Transportation and Housing Agency regarding their economic development work plan and their intent to work with the county's Economic Development Corporation to develop a meaningful recovery work plan for this region within the next 90 days.
Refer to the Chief Executive Office, Economic Development, Alliance WorkNet, and the Stanislaus Economic Development and Workforce Alliance.
This board has received a letter from the California Infrastructure and Economic Development Bank regarding the availability of funding for public works projects.
Refer to the Chief Executive Office, Economic Development, and Department of Public Works.
This board has received the claims as noted on the agenda.
Acknowledge receipt of claims and refer to the Chief Executive Office, Risk Management Division. Are there any Board of Supervisors reports? Supervisor O'Brien.
Mr. Chairman, we just received a very thorough budget update and a very grim picture of what our future looks like. As we've been notified by yourself as well through reading different articles throughout the retirement system still has a very big unknown that we didn't even discuss tonight. It wasn't in any of the figures we looked at tonight. And I'm just requesting that we put a request into Tom Watson of the retirement system to come over and talk to the Board of Supervisors and give us an update of what we can expect or paint the picture so that we have some sort of idea what to expect.
All right, I would say that's a very good idea. Mr. Robinson?
Yes, I have to admit that I took the liberty to make that request on your behalf of Mr. Watson and asked him about his availability in a letter mailed either Friday or this morning. His availability on either March 3rd or March 10th to appear before the board and speak to the board relative to the current economic circumstances of the in the retirement system.
Very good.
Are there any further Board of Supervisors reports? Seeing none, legislative and fiscal management report, Mr. Robinson.
Big news, no budget yet, and that's about all I have to share relative to legislative today. Nothing more.
Okay, being no further business, this meeting is adjourned.